Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, indeed, and as promised, I am joined this morning. I was going to say from the U of M, but you will always be connected to the University of Minnesota Extension.
I'm emeritus.
That's right. Julie Weisenhorn, emeritus.
Yeah.
Professor. It's great to have you, Julie, as usual. I know you that John couldn't make it today, and you're going to feel the whole thing yourself. Now, what you've done many times before.
Yes, I have feeling the weight of the lawn.
Yes. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question, of course, you know, Julie will take care of those. All you have to do is call us or text us, 651-461-9226. What a beautiful day, and I'm thinking, I bet you the Arboretum is going to have a lot of folks out there this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be packed, but it's a great chance to go to the Apple House, too, and pick up your favorite apples of the season. They've got buku apples there, plus all sorts of other great gift items and food items at the Apple House at the corner of Highway 5 and County Road 13. So great time to go there, and of course, a beautiful time to take a good stroll around the Arboretum. Maybe get on the trumpet creeper, learn about the history of the Arboretum and what's going on. Drive the 3 mile drive. Go out to the farm. The farm is fantastic. The giant pumpkins are weighing in at 600 pounds. And there's certainly a lot to see in the foodscape and the gallery garden and all sorts of great stuff. So, perfect day to be out there.
We are so lucky to have that. Mm-hmm. Looking at a text, Julie, right away, when should I put down winter fertilizer? Something I've done already.
Yeah, I think if John were on, I think he would say you probably have some time. It's still warm out and do a little fertilizing, but we're probably want to take a look at the back of the bag, too, and make sure that the temperatures are suitable for applying that.
This might be the weekend, given 71 the high tomorrow with some rain.
Yeah.
So do it today.
Yeah, the rain would be great. Yeah. Be sure to water it in.
Yes. All right, looking at another text, Julie, it says this. If I start cuttings from a coleus now, how big of a pot should be used to get them into spring so I can do cuttings for next year's outdoor planting?
Yeah, great idea. Coleus are super easy to grow, and you would want to start those cuttings in relatively small pots, maybe 4-inch pots right now. You can root them in perlite. You can root them in damp sand. You want to keep those cuttings moist. And I would cut, when you make your cutting, I would dip the end in a little bit of root tone. This is a rooting hormone. You can buy it at a garden center. It's a white powder. And just dip that in. That helps to prompt the plant to put out a lot more roots, really dense roots. And once you notice that the roots are growing, once you kind of gently lift that little cutting out of there, maybe use a popsicle stick or a little spatula to kind of lift it out of the media. Once you see those roots are nice and dense, then you can go ahead and pot them up in just an all-purpose potting soil for indoor plants and grow them in a sunny window.
Okay. This texter says this, Julie. I have a lemon light azalea that had a few blooms on it last week. Mm-hmm. They want you to look in your crystal ball and say, will it still bloom again next spring?
Yeah, it will still bloom next spring. This is a kind of an interesting situation. It's called remontancy, and we breed remontancy into plants like roses. It literally means to rebloom or bloom again. And so some plants are bred that way. We want to see repeat bloom through the growing season, but we do see some of that these days in plants that typically would bloom in the early spring, like azaleas, or maybe it might be penstemon, or lilacs have been one of the big players in Remontancy lately. And people get really concerned because it's not what they expect. They expect to see these flowers in the spring, and that's it. And, you know, voila. But we do see a lot of lilacs reblooming. It's a response to environmental stresses. And also, once those plants, and I'll try to explain this clearly, but when those plants bloom in the spring, after they bloom, they have a certain period of time that they're going to set buds for the following year, for the next year to bloom, the next spring. And if at that time that they set those buds, they go into the temperatures change to a colder or cooler condition, that can actually signal the plant once it warms up that it's gone through a winter, so to speak, a cold period, and so they may rebloom then later. But typically we liken it to a situation with environmental stress as well.
Okay.
Complicated, but interesting.
Back to the phones we go, Julie. Todd calling in from Ramsey this morning. Hi, Todd. What is your question for Julie?
Good morning. About early summer, we took a couple of our tropical houseplants and put them outside. Great. So that they could get some better sun. Mm-hmm. And as I was going to start to bring them in recently for the winter, I noticed some movement in the dirt, and I could tell there's some little bugs that had decided to make them home. Mm-hmm. What can I do, or what should I do before I bring them in? I don't want to bring bugs into the house that will affect the other plants that are already there.
This is a great question, really, really timely for everybody who's bringing in their house plants. So if you see insects or you suspect that, you want to repot those plants before you bring them in. And when you take them out of the pot, get as much soil off of the roots as you can. You may even want to wash the roots off so that you just have pretty clean roots. And then wash the pot if you're going to reuse it, or use a clean new pot and clean new soil. This is soil that's not been sitting outside in your backyard, but something that's been sealed up in the garage, or something that you buy, and use new clean soil. And then just repot that plant and bring it inside. Really wash the pot off well, because you can get a lot of critters living on the bottom of the pot, or between the pot and the soil, or the base of the pot. So go ahead and do that too. But that's a really great timely question, because we're all bringing plants in from out of doors. And this is a time to really take a look at those plants. When you have them out of the soil even, take a look underneath and wash the plant off. Maybe put it in a sink with a sprayer. Spray it off really well. You might want to treat it with something like a low-impact insecticidal soap or a horticultural oil. If you find insects on it, you want to remove those and just keep an eye on those plants. And if you have house plants that have been in the house all summer, and you're bringing in plants from out of doors, kind of keep them separate from those house plants that have been indoors, because those are pest-free. And you may want to just make sure after a week or two that there's nothing going on in those plants that you brought in. There's no diseases. There's no insects. You don't want to contaminate those plants that you already have indoors.
All right. You're going to have to help me with this one, Julie. I have, texter says, a weeping blue spruce with Rhizosphera needle cast.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm glad you know what that is.
You did a good job on that.
Well, very good. I've gotten a quote for a professional treatment, which is very expensive, and they tell me it's needed every year. Can a homeowner do this is the question. I'm also afraid that if I left untreated, it'll spread to other conifers in our community.
So this is a needle cast disease. It's a fungal disease. And it affects primarily spruce, and in particular Colorado spruce. And this is a weeping form of that plant. I'm really sorry to hear that, because first of all, weeping evergreens are super expensive and they grow quite slowly. So they're a big investment, not only of money, but also time. And it's unfortunate that it has this needle cast disease. Not totally unexpected, because it is pretty prevalent in the environment. One of the things about needle cast diseases is when we have very cool, wet, windy weather, which we did a lot of the early part of the spring, those fungal spores blow around and they get onto other plants. The other thing that can affect these needle cast diseases is when we have humid weather and the plants are very densely planted together, like in a windrow or something, a windbreak. They can also then, you're kind of trapping all that humidity within the needles and within the base of the plant. If you have irrigation also and it sprays the bottom part of the tree, that can also contribute to it. So it's wet, it's windy, it's clustered together, it's humid. All those factors play into needle cast disease severity. I think because of the investment that you've made into this plant, it's probably best to have the to have it treated. And this is something you have to have a certified arborist do. But you can change some of your cultural habits. So if you have irrigation, turn it off by that plant or change the heads or do something so that you're not spraying that tree. Maybe there's a little bit of pruning you can do on the bottom of it to just air it out. That's a little more difficult with weeping plants. But look at that plant and see what you can do to relieve some of the humidity in that area. Sometimes you can't help it. It's just the conditions that the plant's growing in. But I would follow the advice of a certified arborist, and that is something that they have to do because these are labeled chemicals for professionals, not for homeowners. So that's how I would approach it. It's a great tree, big investment, and something that probably, you know, some years will be worse than others. But, yeah, it's unfortunate, but it is something that we see often in the landscape.
Very good. Thanks, Julie. Hang on, please. We're going to take a quick break. Be right back on the other side. If you have any kind of a lawn or garden question for Julie Weisenhorn, now is your chance. 651-461-9226. From News Talk 830 WCCO. And welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny Long here, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Well, she's retired now. Somebody sent a text, Julie, and says, Denny, isn't Julie awfully young to be retired? And well, that's true. You are. But you just, because you started when you were 10.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Well, I don't know. Been here a long time.
Anyway, you're still active and still will be, and
yes.
Will, just as importantly, still be on with us here on CCO Radio. We love that.
I'll be a volunteer now.
Absolutely. That's great to hear. All right, Julie, back to work. Happy crisp fall morning, Texter says. If I understand correctly, it's a good thing to keep the perennials happy with water at this point in the year. A couple of questions. How do I determine when to stop watering for the season? I have new from seed this season native plants. I don't typically water them, but okay, I don't know.
So
where
basically,
should they water them now like I do the perennials? I guess is the question.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to water. So you want to water really deeply. You don't want to just sprinkle a little water on it. You want to get that water down into the soil. Native plants are more tolerant of our swinging weather conditions and our, you know, drought and heat and cold and dry and moist and all that. But don't forget your shrubs and trees too, because they need that water also to make it through the winter. If you remember last year, we had a very dry fall, kind of like now.
Yeah.
And then we went into, almost no snow over the winter. It was really, really hard on plants, especially long-lived plants. I heard from more people that they lost long-lived plants, hardy plants, you know, didn't matter. They got nailed by that kind of condition of dry and cold. One thing to understand is that dry soil gets colder faster than moist soil. So we want our plants to gradually go into dormancy at this time of year. We don't want to shock them. We don't want to hit them with a lot of cold right away. So by watering your plants really deeply and infrequently, it keeps that water down deep. That helps those really deep roots to survive through the winter. And as that soil is moist, it tends to stay a little bit warmer as our air temperatures tend to cool down. And roots are susceptible to damage when they're really, really cold, when they're exposed to really cold air. So keep watering, turn that sprinkler on till, you know, and maybe stick your hand in the soil a little bit. And if it's about damp, you know, moist down 6 to 9 inches, that's great. That's really great. And then you can kind of back off. I don't think there's any clear time to stop watering. Usually it's when you have to turn your hoses off, your outdoor spigots, and put your hoses away. That's usually when people stop. But hopefully we'll get some rain. I think it's forecasted for this week.
Yeah, tomorrow.
Kind of tomorrow? Excellent.
Tomorrow and tomorrow night. Yeah.
That's great. That's great. So just pay attention to the moisture and just remember that that moist soil cools down slower than dry soil, and that's easier on the roots.
Good point. So take another phone call. Julie Jean calling in from Eagan, Minnesota this morning. Thank you for holding on, Jean. What is your question?
Hi there. I have a columnar Norway maple. The leaves are very curled under and brown, and it started happening about 4 weeks ago. It started to look like it was dying. I mean, it was really bad. And one of our city arborists that came out looked at it and said that it could also be a sign of overwatering because we were worried, well, is it not getting enough water? And he said, unfortunately, it's the same indication if you overwater it. And it had been watered a lot, especially when we first got it. I used a plant app that I have called Picture This, and it immediately came up with overwatered and that it had something called brown spot. And then it indicated a home remedy I can use where you mix 1 tablespoon of baking soda with water and spray the leaves after you get rid of all the brown leaves on it so that they don't carry on to the other leaves. And then you're to do that once every 7 days for a month. Does any of that ring true to you?
Wow, that's
a lot
of information. I'm going to go with the arborist because they're more knowledgeable than I am. They're trained in this. So I would say that, and it sounds like, you know, maybe overwatering is the case. As far as the treatment, I don't think I would trust a home remedy treatment. And I would follow up with that arborist again and just say, I mean, maybe they left behind some instructions and said, you know, cut back on the watering, mulch the plant so you don't have to water as often. That helps to hold moisture in the soil. And just keep an eye on the plant as we go through, you know, as it emerges in the spring and leaves out, see how it looks. So I think I would probably do that because it's pretty, I like to go with the arborist's diagnosis, and I'd mulch it if you haven't mulched it. And then you won't have to water it as much, and that water can just stay and keep that soil moist and see how the plant emerges in the spring.
All right, very good. Thank you for the call. If you want to call in or text in, it's just one number, 651-461-9226. I want to get another text in before we take a break for weather. This texture wants to get rid of Julie lilies of the valley that's been in the yard for 40 years. I plan on using Roundup next spring. What is your opinion?
Lilies of the valley are great plants when they bloom, and after that, they're kind of ho-hum, I think. but they are a great ground cover. They do fill in where maybe other plants can't grow very well. I have a lot of them in my yard. Anybody want any, just let me know because I'd like to get rid of a lot of mine. They're harder to get rid of because they have runners that run underneath the soil, so you have to kind of follow the stem. And any little bit of stem or any little bit of root that's left in the soil is going to pop up another plant. So they're a little tricky that way. As far as using Roundup, which active ingredient is glyphosate, you can do that. You want to just be careful about protecting other plants nearby and making sure that you don't have any drift from that spray onto those plants. I would also recommend just getting in there with a big fork and digging out as much as you can first and then seeing what pops up. So starting with manual removal as much as you can and then using the Roundup or a spray, a broadleaf herbicide to go in and treat just the patches that come back up. Because you can pick up almost lily of the valley, if you really get a good dig under it, you can almost pull it up like a carpet sometimes, and you do a good job at that. So that's, I think I would try manually removing it as much as you can, and then treat, just spot treating rather than treat a whole mass of it all at one time. I think the risk to other plants is much higher when you're going to treat a big area than just spot treat a plant here and there.
All right. Let's take a quick break, have a look at that forecast, and then have more show, more of our Smart Garden Show, presented by our friends at Great Garage Floor. Stay with us here, News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to our Smart Garden Show. Denny along with you this morning, along with Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Still with the U of M, always with the U of M.
I'm always forever. From the U of M.
Of course.
Forever.
And Julie, we have callers and certainly, as usual, a bunch of text questions as well. Let's get to them. Pete, first up, calling from Mound this morning. Thank you, Pete. What is your question?
Good morning, Kyle. Thank you for taking my call. We're cleaning out an old hayloft, and it looks like there'll be a lot of bat guano there. Mm-hmm. And I was curious if you had some thoughts about using that on a vegetable garden.
Ooh. First of all, be sure to wear masks. Be sure to protect yourself while you're doing that. Breathing in that can be deadly, or not deadly, but dangerous to your health. So be sure that you're being cautious and protecting yourself as you do the cleaning. I wouldn't put any feces on the garden, especially if it's just scraped up off the floor. I don't know. I'm not comfortable with that, especially a vegetable garden. It can carry pathogens that can transfer to your vegetables. And so I would probably just, if you've got a space that you can just throw it in a pile and compost it, cover it up with grasses or some of the hay that you're cleaning out, that kind of stuff, just so it's not blowing around. You don't want any spores or anything from that blowing around into the air around you. So, but protect yourself while you're doing that. That's true of any old house, any old building that you're cleaning out. There's a lot of things that are in the air and on the surfaces that you don't want to breathe in. So, yeah, be careful with that. But I wouldn't use it on my vegetable garden or my garden at all at this point.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. Karen, calling in from St. Paul this morning. Thank you, Karen. What's your question for Julie?
Hi, Julie. What I want to know is we have a yellow wood tree that's 5 years old that has been doing beautifully. And this past spring, the leaves started sprouting and then they died. We had an arborist come out and check it.
Great.
He made some recommendations for watering it so many gallons a week, whatever. And he stopped back a couple times and he thought, he said, I don't think it's going to make it. My whole question is, do we just let it struggle through the winter and give it one more chance this spring?
Well, I'm a fan of waiting on trees, especially in shrubs, because they can go through a difficult year and then reemerge just fine the next year. I'm glad you called in an arborist. That's awesome. That's really good knowledge to have. I would protect it from browsing, from animal browsing. I'd fence it so that you don't have any little critters or big critters feeding on it. I would mulch the root area to protect the roots and, again, help hold in moisture and help that soil to gradually get cold so it's easier on the roots. And I would leave the fencing up probably in the spring and just make sure that you're not getting any browsing on it. A five-year-old yellow wood, you might need a pretty good-sized fence, but that's my recommendation for it. I agree with you. I would just let it – I would see what happens next spring and see how it goes. And just keep an eye on the soil moisture. Make sure if we have a dry spring that you're watering it well. Keep that mulch on it. And usually recommend a mulch ring at least 6 feet in diameter. And the reason for that is that allows to, that kind of compensates for the canopy, for the spread of the tree, so that you can mow around it or work around it without disturbing the roots. So really kind of keeping the stress level as low as possible for that tree so it can recover.
Very good. I want to grab another phone call in a moment. I don't want to forget our texters either. Here's one that says, I'm still waiting to receive my allium bulbs in the mail. When is it too late to plant that and tulip bulbs?
We usually would like those tulip bulbs and allium bulbs, those spring blooming bulbs, to have some kind of root formation before they go into the winter. So usually a lot of people will dig up to the point where they can't dig in the soil. They'll plant and where the soil is frozen. I have done that myself. It's not terribly successful. So it's really dependent upon the weather we get and whether you can actually dig in there. When you do put those bulbs in, plant them at the right depth that's recommended on the packaging or the information that comes with them, and then water them so that they're not going to dehydrate over the winter.
I know we touched on is it too late to fertilize the lawn question. We're getting a bunch of the same question, but also besides that, maybe we can put that to rest. Is it too late to fertilize or use milorganite on the lawn? But also, how long should the grass be now and before the snow falls?
Looks like Julie dropped out. We'll get her back on in a sec here, Dad.
Oh, okay. Julie just dropped out. Another technical glitch, but we'll get Julie.
Sorry about that.
Oh, there you are. Shall I repeat this? Did you miss that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, we were talking about fertilizer. Is it too late to fertilize our lawn, this texture, or use milorganite? And we're getting a bunch of the same question, but another question besides is it too late to fertilize, how long should the grass be before the snow falls?
Okay, so first of all, I'm going to take a look, and I would recommend people take a look at our lawn care calendar that we have on our lawn care section of Yard and Garden. I haven't mentioned our website yet, and I would take a look at that, and I'm just going to scan through here. Let's see what to do. Fertilization. I'm going to say that you can fertilize, early August through mid-October, so we got a little bit of time to do that yet. And be sure to water it in if it's a granular. Somebody mentioned milorganite. So milorganite has phosphorus in it. And so you want to be sure. We have a phosphorus law in Minnesota where if you have an established lawn, you cannot use a fertilizer with phosphorus in it. So you don't want to put that milorganite on an established lawn. You want to use something that has a zero for that middle number of the analysis. If you are putting in new lawn, if you've seeded or if you have a soil test that recommends phosphorus for your soil, then you could certainly use the milorganite on that. Did I get everything?
Yeah, and as far as the level, how short should the lawn be cut?
Okay. So I think if your lawn is just a normal height, 3.5 inch, or so, 3 inches, 3.5, then it's just fine to fertilize through that. You don't have to cut it down really short to fertilize it.
Very good. All right. Let's go back to the phones. I think Al in Plymouth, I hope Al is still there. Al, thank you for waiting if you are still there. And what's your question for Julie?
Hi, I have two questions. Good show. I have some shrubs that the mice and bunnies have been chewing the bark on. Is it too late or too early to put tree covering on those branches?
Okay. So you don't want to cover those branches. You want those branches to heal themselves, but you do want to fence those shrubs. So you want to use a hardware cloth. It has little tiny squares. You can buy half inch or quarter inch. And you want to probably choose a taller hardware cloth and leave it on through the winter. That's when they're going to be feeding on it the most. And so use that hardware cloth around those shrubs. Other than that, you don't want to cover those branches with anything because you want that plant to heal itself.
Okay, thanks. My next question is, my wife used to brown bag some geraniums. What's the proper procedure for doing that?
With geraniums to keep them, this is to keep them through the winter. And you can do a couple things. Some people just put them into a heated garage or a cool basement and let them go dormant through the winter. You give them a little bit of water about once a month just to keep them from completely drying out. And then take them out in the early winter or early spring. Get them into a sunny window and start watering them. You can leave them in the pot. If you're going to take them out of the pots like that, then you would want to pot them up probably maybe February, and then again put them in a sunny window so that they can start growing so they're ready to go outside when it's warm enough.
All right. Dexter says this, Julie, today I'm finally getting out to plant some new hosta and phlox perennials and a small hydrangea. Yes, I have procrastinated terribly. What can I do to increase their odds of surviving the winter? Love the show.
Well, first of all, I have never procrastinated in my life. I am a notorious procrastinator for getting things in the late fall. So I still have stuff to harvest out of my vegetable and herb garden. So don't feel bad.
Can do it tomorrow.
But you want to be sure, if you're going to plant those now, is just make sure you water them in well. So you want to make sure that you're getting that water down deep into those roots, and then keep an eye on them. If we don't get rain, if we continue in this kind of dry streak, you want to be sure that you're watering them up until you can't water them. You hung up your hoses for the year, gets too cold. And I would also mulch those plants. You can put wood mulch down around them. That always looks really nice when they emerge. You can use chopped up leaves that you've gathered from your property, and just to help again hold in that moisture and keep those roots protected, so that that temperature can gradually get colder through the as we go into the winter. And remember to water, because that moist soil is going to be warmer and be easier on the roots as they go dormant as they go into the wintertime.
Okay. This texter was given a manavilla plant, and it is now 6 feet plus. I'm going to try, they say, to overwinter it. How far dare I cut it down?
Usually our rule of thumb is a third of the plant. And that's because we want to leave, obviously, leaves so that it continues to photosynthesize. So I would start with that. Sometimes with some of these plants, you really need to cut them back to even get them through the door of your house. So some of it is logistical, but as a rule of thumb, you could take a couple feet off of it. And then keep that plant moist through the winter. And then also, keep an eye out, just like we talked about earlier. Look through that plant really, really well before you bring it indoors. I would even maybe cut it back and put it in the shower and really give it a dousing with water to get any kind of issues, bugs, dirt, whatever, off of that plant. That's a tricky one because it's a vining plant.
Similar question about a hibiscus plant that texter mm-hmm. put outside for the summer. Grows, blooms beautifully, but now before a freeze, I bring it back in. I have some tiny flying insects coming off it.
Yeah.
What's the same way, same process?
So those are probably fungus gnats. Fungus gnats live in the soil, and they are just like they sound. They like wet organic conditions. They feed on organic matter, the roots of plants. The best thing to do is repot those plants. And as we mentioned earlier in the show, use a clean pot or wash the one that you have really well with hot soapy water, and use fresh potting soil. Don't use stuff that's been laying outside. It can also have fungus gnats in it. Buy a new bag and use clean potting soil and wash the roots off before you pot it up. So it's a good day to do that because you can do it outside and you don't make a mess in your house.
Very good. All right, let's take a quick break, Julie. Be back on the other side with more of our Smart Garden Show brought to us by our friends at Great Garage Floors in the Twin Cities. A beautiful Saturday morning. We currently have 45 on our way to 67. Stay with us. News Talk 830 WCCO. Speaking of garages and homes, just a reminder that coming along next hour in our Home Improvement Show, filling in for Andy Lindis will be Luke Panic, the deck specialist at Lindis. So if you have any questions about decks, or any general home improvement question, he's the guy you can chat with next hour. Just a reminder. In the meantime, Julie Weisenhorn is with us from the U of M, recently retired, but still I was looking at some texts, but some folks are concerned that you won't be on the radio, but you will be.
I will be, as long as they'll let me.
Oh, yes.
I'm just on as a volunteer now. I'm coming out of retirement as a master gardener. So there are extension volunteers, so I'll be continuing in that role going forward.
As well as continuing on CCO. So we're glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Tell us more about what's going on the website. There's more information that we should impart here.
Yeah, we've got some excellent web pages. Based on the questions today, I want to refer people to a web page under our flower section called Managing Insects on Houseplants, on Indoor Plants. And it has really good information on identifying pests that may be coming in on your plants and what to do about them, like the fungus gnats question that we just had, little flying insects around. So take a look at that. The other page, too, that's pretty timely is the amaryllis webpage. A lot of people get these beautiful amaryllis for holidays. They grow them outside through the summer. They're really not sure what to do with them at this time of year. I just put mine into our garage. We have a 45-degree garage. It's heated, partially heated through the winter. And it's time to let them just go dormant and kind of take a break from growing and blooming. And I'll take those out probably in about 8 to 12 weeks, clean them all up, put them in a sunny window, and then water them. But that page really explains a lot about how that works and what to do about them. So that's the amaryllis page. The other thing, too, is to check out our Yard and Garden News, which is comes out once a month. And Laura does a really super job with John's help of creating a checklist for the month. So take a look at that, and that will give you kind of a heads up on things that Minnesota gardeners should be doing right now. So that's at extension.umn.edu.
Yard and Julie, Garden. Finally, I forgot to ask, when are the abiders, the group you play in, are playing?
Well, thanks for the promo. Really much appreciated. We are playing at the Gillespie Center here in Mound to celebrate their 25th anniversary on October 25th. Tickets are required. And then also we are playing for our West Tonka, Western Communities Rotary. We're playing for the Brew Fest again, 13th year, and that is on November 8th. It's at Gale Woods Farm in Minnetrista. You also need tickets for that. And both of these are great fundraisers for both of these really super entities for the Western metro area and beyond.
I know you have a lot of fun doing that, too.
We do.
So do the people. All right. When should endless summer hydrangeas be cut back, Texter wants to know.
Well, I'm a kind of a fan of not cutting them back, except for deadheading the flowers in the spring. Endless summer are supposedly bloomers on both new wood, so wood that comes up next spring, or the old wood, the stuff that was growing this year. And I like to leave as much as possible, depending on how the plant wants to grow, if it wants to bloom on the new wood or wants to bloom on the old wood. I like to leave a lot up. So I wouldn't cut it back. I'd leave that plant up through the winter. And then in the spring, you can go ahead and as it starts to leaf out, you can trim it back to kind of shape the plant a little bit. And then also to get rid of those spent flowers on there as well.
I don't know about you, Julie, but my Saturday would not be complete if we didn't talk about Creeping Charlie. Here are a couple of questions. One, a texter used the triclopyr to a lawn full of Creeping Charlie, but the triclopyr was like 4 years old.
Okay.
Nothing happened. Could that have been the problem is one question.
Might have been.
What about heavy dew? Could that have diminished the effects?
I'm not sure about the dew. It could have watered it down, but it's probably old pesticide. You can deposit or get rid of old pesticides and paints and things like that at one of our county hazardous waste locations. I know one up in Brooklyn Center or Brooklyn Park. I mix those two up. But there you can bring it up and they'll dispose of them safely. So don't throw them in the garbage. Don't pour them down the drain. You know, take them to a location where they'll dispose of them properly and buy some fresh stuff.
That's a great idea. And is this a good time of year to spray for Creeping Charlie?
This is a good time of year to do broadleaf treatments of weeds. So September through late October is a recommendation from John on our Minnesota Lawn Care calendar. This, by the way, you can find also on our landscape or on our Yard and Garden page under Lawn Care. And he lists at best time September through late October. This is when these weeds are putting an awful lot of effort into growing so that they can make it through the winter. So they're taking up, they're translocating a lot of minerals and nutrients and water, and they'll also do that with the chemical too. So it's a great time through the late October to be treating for broadleaf weed control.
Julie, this listener says that he or she has gathered Becca seed pods. Can the plant grow from these seeds as it is a perennial?
I am stumped on Becca seed pods.
Oh,
I do
homework.
Not know what those are. I think I would, if you don't know, if you can't find it in another source, there might be another extension organization in one of our other land grant universities throughout the United States that might have more information than I do. But you can also do trial and error as well. If Laura were on, she might know what Becca plant is. I do not, though.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Well, we'll find out. I know we will. Can or should I, Texter says, cut back my Diplodenia back before I bring it in the fall?
it's always good to give your plants a little bit of a cutting back when you bring them in. And again, as we've been mentioning today, do a good look through that plant, make sure that it's clean, repot it if it's necessary, put a clean, you know, use some clean new soil, some potting soil before you, you know, bring it indoors and bring some unwanted hitchhikers with it.
I think we have time for one or two more. We have a lilac bush, Texas says, which is not produced in 2 years and is dried out. Do we trim it back or just give up and dig it out?
I would dig that one out. There's a lot of great lilacs out there that you can go ahead and try. There's one called Bloomerang, which actually reblooms. It's bred. Remember I was talking about remontancy. It's bred to rebloom. So you might want to try a new kind of lilac in that space.
Okay. When should I plant my garlic? Texter wants to know.
Oh, I've got my garlic to plant too. I'm waiting till it gets a little bit colder, like steadily colder. I don't want these garlic cloves to start growing. I'll probably plant them, not next week, but maybe the next week. Sometime in October.
All right, about a minute to go. We have just cleared some land underneath a group of pine trees. We would like to plant some grass. Can we do that now in October, throw out some grass seed, or is it too late? What would you tell this, Dexter?
I probably wouldn't try growing grass under pine trees. It's very dry, and that's the nature of the soil under conifers. I would go ahead and mulch it, and I would look for some shade-loving, drought-tolerant perennials to plant under there.
All right, Julie, give us once again the website for folks to do some great reading, and you can find out a whole lot of stuff there.
Yeah, extension.umn.edu, and you can go to Yard and Garden. Tons of great information. Be sure to look at the Yard and Garden news and Laura and John's tips on what to do at this time of year, early October.
And I want to get to the Arboretum, but get online first, right?
Yep, get online, get some tickets. Lots of stuff going on. Visit the Apple House. It's plumb full of apples, a lot of other great things out there, too.
Yeah.
And really a lovely place to be this time of year.
It really is. Julie, thanks so much for the help. I know we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Denny.
Julie Weisenhorn from the U of M. Yes, now retired, but will be with us here on CCO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know,
think of the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.